Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
You know what the best thing about the roundtable episodes is?
What's that?
We don't have to sing.
Aha! We just get to present like we normally do and host. Speaking of hosting, what's up, everybody? This is the Game Nights Roundtable, the discussion after every Game Nights episode where we talk about all of the intricacies and all the things that happened in the episode, as well as what may have went wrong, what we may have done wrong, and what was also really awesome.
Yeah, we answer sort of the most asked questions you have out there, address a lot of the comments that are coming up frequently. Yeah, this is going to be a good one. We're talking about Game Nights, the Commander 2020 episode.
Woo-hoo.
If you're watching this in the future, this is the one with Cassius Marsh and Alias V. And yeah, I guess
I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
Oh yeah, I'm Josh Lee Kwai. How's it?
Whoa, oh my, what was that order?
Yeah, it's a different series. I don't have to sing. I don't even have to say how's it.
That's true.
the chains are off. I can do whatever I want.
Oh no.
Let's just give our normal spoiler alert warning. There's no way to do a series or a show like this without spoiling what's in the episode that we're talking about. So if you have not seen the Game Nights episode for Commander 2020, hit pause on this. Go watch that. Come back. All right. Also, normal disclaimer, we're not calling anybody dumb or stupid for the questions they ask. This is, you know, we're not going to address questions for the most part that only a couple people ask. We're addressing the big ones that a lot of people ask. So anybody that's name gets put on screen and we say, actually, that's not correct because of this. That is something that a lot of people were confused about. And, and I've said this before, I consider that to be sort of our fault as the showrunners, storytellers, and that we didn't explain things very well. So hopefully we can rectify that here.
Otherwise, you're going to get your name up on the screen if you're commenting. So maybe that's cool too.
Also, if you're not commenting on our videos, you should probably be commenting because there's a chance you can affect this episode of our show and bring up some points that are interesting for us to talk about. So,
yep.
All right, let's start with the most asked question by far.
Why? Where is the Mardu Humans deck?
Yeah, so a lot of people were disappointed that the Humans deck didn't get played, the one with Jarena Kudrow on the cover. I think it's called Reckless Regiment.
Yes, it's behind us somewhere here, and you will have seen it as well in all the product shots in the episode.
So this year, of course, there were 5 pre-constructed decks for the Commander products. In the last few years, there's only been 4. Which made it really easy for us because we sit at a table that only really has room for 4 people.
Everyone plays a deck.
Yeah. Listen, we can't do a 5-player game. There's not a really good way to shoot it just because how do you lay it out? You need an entire another camera for wherever that person's sitting, right? Because they'd have to sit at like the head of the table. Now we're talking about an additional set of interviews for that person, which exponentially makes the entire episode harder. Because
I think you actually need 2 more camera angles because you can't just shoot them in isolation. You got to see them next to players. And so
we're
2.
Adding 2 cameras. We're adding a whole nother interview. Every time anything happens, that's another person that you have to choose. Do I cut to them? And
yowza.
Yeah, so it's just exponentially harder. Whenever there's 5, we're always going to have to only show 4. I doubt we'll ever show a game with more than 4 people. It's just too difficult for the show. The way that we choose our decks, do you want to go through it?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. The main thing that we want to do is give our guests the first choice at choosing what decks they're going to play on the show. So those show up on the day, and because these are the pre-cons, no one's ever seen them before. We'll give Alias and Cassius both a chance to look through and see, okay, which one of these decks would I like to pilot? And they decide between them, their first 2 picks, and then Josh and I, from the leftovers, would choose what we are going to play.
And that also happens when we don't do pre-constructed decks. Yeah. So, like, for the Theros episode, we just showed everybody the legendary creatures beforehand, and the guests get to choose which ones they want first, and then Jimmy and I choose from what's left, and then everybody brews their decks around those after they've chosen their commanders.
Yep.
So this just so happened that the Mardu Humans deck, nobody chose it.
Just so happens. And I think for you, kind of obvious reasons, it's a much more combat-based deck. People are coming on this show. It's not like something that they can do every single episode, and I think people want to play the decks that are most interesting to them. So Cassius saw the cycling deck and went, this is sweet, sweet value. Alias saw the monster deck and went, this is awesome, all these keywords. I wanted to play with Mutate because it's a new set, and then Josh, of course, is not going to... Well, actually, Josh has picked Mardu in the past, so let's not make that clarification.
But definitely the instance matter deck is like more up my alley for sure. So yeah, I don't think it's that surprising. The Mardu deck is a little more straightforward, so just, you know, nobody went after it. I mean, if somebody wanted that deck, they would have played it. That's just the way it goes. One was going to be left out, I think, no matter what. Let's say the Calamax deck didn't be played, then the comments would be full of like, oh, very sad deck about that. So we get it, but it's just impossible for us to play all five of them.
Yep. And hey, if you want to learn more about the Mardu Humans deck, we did a whole series on every single precon and how to upgrade them. So just check out the channel and make sure you subscribe for that.
Yeah, definitely. Good point. All right, let's start with some rules-based questions here from the episode. The first two, not surprising, are centered around the most complicated new mechanic we've ever seen, which is Mutate. A number of people asked, Jimmy, why, when you mutated onto the Trumpeting Gnar on turn four, why it could attack. They were thinking it should have summoning sickness because you chose to put Otrimi on top.
And, well, there, Josh, I'm just swinging at you for six.
Okay, I have no blocks. Ouch! I will take six and go to 34.
Yep, so summoning sickness, there are a lot of ways to describe it, but one of the main ways to know if a creature can attack is if it was under your control from the beginning of your turn. And because the Trumpeting Gnar is not leaving the battlefield and coming back as a new creature, Otrimi's mutating on top of it. It's still the same card, if that makes sense. Like, the physical card underneath is still the same one from the last turn. So that card has haste at this point, essentially, or it's not summoning sick, so it can attack. Otrimi doesn't change the card in a way that your board looks at it and goes, well, you haven't had control of that since the beginning of your turn or whatever.
Yeah, it's not a new permanent.
Yeah.
It's a permanent that already existed that's now been altered.
Like an enchantment aura you might put on the creature.
Exactly.
So it just happens to change the name and CMC and some other things.
If it hadn't entered the battlefield effect, it wouldn't get it again when Otrimi mutated onto it, right? Because it never left and came back. So it's just the same permanent. So yeah, it doesn't actually have haste. It just kind of feels like it has haste. Mm-hmm. But again, I think the best way to describe it is it's like an aura almost in that instance. All right, the next question is about Mutate and the command zone. We have a clip to play for a lot of these, so we probably played the clip for the last one without me giving any prelude, but let's watch the clip now.
All right, I will uphold my deal, and I will blood curdle your big monster thing.
Oh, gosh.
Sweet.
The ever-playful Otrimi is going to go into the command zone.
All right, so the question here is, when the Mutate stack dies...
Because Alias removes it.
Certainly. Yeah. Thank you, Alias, by the way.
Nah.
people were asking, well, if it's all one creature, why doesn't the Trumpeting Gnar also go to the command zone with Otrimi? And this is one of the ways that Mutate starts to get pretty confusing.
Yeah, obviously, Commander is a format that is going to mess with the rules a little bit because of changing zones and putting things into the command zone. Fortunately, Eli Schifrin, who we always text in a hurry if we have a rules question.
We're literally on the day during game nights in this episode. There was, I forget what came up, but we were like, pause, ask our judge. He's like, I'm not sure because this mechanic's
weird.
First
time I've never.
And I'm like texting Eli and hoping he responds quickly because we're recording. Like, cameras are still rolling. Good thing Eli often answers like in a jiffy. So
yeah, he must be in tune when we're shooting. He's like, need to wake up now.
I think Eli's just on it in general as a person.
Okay, so there was a large article. There's actually been a few. There's a Reddit AMA for all these rule things. We also did, we should know, a whole video about the mechanics of Mutate. So we explain a lot of these way more in depth. So Mutate, the new keyword counters. Eli Schifrin's article about this particular sequence says, if a commander is part of a merged creature, That's what they're calling two creatures mutated onto each other. The resulting creature is a commander. If it leaves the battlefield and the commander is moved to the command zone instead, that permanent and the other cards contained by that permanent go to the appropriate zone, while the commander card goes to the command zone. So when they leave the battlefield, they leave as a single unit, but then they split, I believe, is kind of how it works. And then you can say, okay, well, the commander is changing zones, so I can choose to put that in the command zone. And then if these other cards just died or went to the graveyard, then they're just going to the graveyard.
Right.
A little confusing.
Yeah. I mean, like I said about Companion and whatnot, I think they just decided that they wanted it to work that way, and then they wrote the rules. So that, like, yeah, because otherwise you wouldn't want to mutate onto stuff because you want it to generally go to the graveyard, and because other cards that are in the command zone are just stuck there.
Yeah, forever.
You could never cast them if they're not your commander. So anyway, that is the official rule. You can choose to only put the commander part back in the command zone, and well, actually, you have to do that. I don't think you can choose to put the Trumpeting Gnar into the command zone if you even want to in that case.
It just sort of fizzles and goes into permanent exile, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, some weird words here too. Contained by that permanent merged creature. So just keep in mind that the wording around this may not be final either, but this is how the rule works.
And again, we did an episode very recently. It's called Most Complicated New Mechanics Ever or something like that. We'll put the thumbnail on screen. We'll put the link in the show notes. But if you're having any questions about Mutator Companion, hopefully it will be answered in that video.
What was your judge face in that video? Mine was this.
Mine was like, what's going on?
I'm just like this again. Yeah, oh no, what did they print this time? And as far as rules questions go, that's kind of it.
I gotta say, this might be the first episode where we didn't have any sort of major mistakes. Commander's super complicated. Even with a level 2 judge sitting here, we usually have like one or two things where we're like, yeah, that we got that rule wrong.
We missed something because there's complicated board states.
Yeah, in this one, we didn't really have that, but we did have some decision or play mistakes.
Yeah.
And the first one's mine, and it's kind of a big one, I think.
But this one is really, when I read this comment, I was like, oh, wait, they're separate triggers.
Yeah, I saw it later when we were editing and was like, why didn't I do that? I just didn't obviously think of it on the day. So I have at one point a bounce land and I play Frantic Search. In fact, let's play the clip.
Okay, I'm going to float a red mana.
Okay.
Then I'm going to play Simic Growth Chamber, which will bounce the mountain that I tapped. And then I will add a blue and another red and I will play Frantic Search. Mm. So I draw two cards and then discard two cards and I untap three lands.
Oof.
All right, you float that mana, play a bounce land.
Right, and I end up playing nothing after the Frantic Search. I discard the cards, I leave it untapped, and then I play like a Growth Spiral on my end
step,
on the end step before my next turn. But what I could have done here, and a lot of people pointed out, is with the bounce land trigger on the stack. So you play the Simic Growth Chamber and it says, okay, trigger, you have to bounce one of your lands back to your hand.
Yep. It enters the battlefield tapped, and it says when this enters the battlefield, return the land you control to its owner's hand.
So that trigger's on the stack. I could tap the Arcane Signet on my other land, cast Frantic Search, draw the two cards, discard the two cards, and now untap the three lands,
yeah.
And then I can float the mana again before the trigger for the bounce land goes off and bounces the mountain back to my hand. And now I have the fourth mana, and I can cast Kalamax.
Wow, that's interesting.
So now I have Kalamax on the battlefield a full turn earlier. And think of how much this changes the game. You're not able to attack me the following turn, or you can't attack me with the beast, so that saves me three life right there. Also, my next turn, I'm now casting my Growth Spiral and getting two Growth Spirals.
Right.
Because it's tapped, or I'm maybe getting that on somebody else's turn and casting something on my turn. Yeah, it's kind of a big play in the game. Who knows what would have happened? I obviously ran out of gas later in the game, and I don't know that this solves that problem, so I don't think it like makes me win.
Right.
But the tenor of the game, I think, is a lot different, because maybe Jimmy's not coming at me as hard.
Well, yeah, our feud ends earlier and probably doesn't restart.
And so maybe we both have a little bit better chance in the game, because we're not just slugging at each other.
Yeah, also, like, we made the note that you played an Arcane Signet first out of everyone, and you were the last in turn order, so this 100% would have at least made it feel like you were almost first player.
Yeah, so an important interaction, I think, to point out to people that I missed on the day, and yeah, could have had a big effect. And I think it's very easy to look at the end of games or the moments near when you die and say, like, those are the mistakes I made that caused me to, you know, not take down this game. And a lot of times, mistakes you make earlier in the game have this domino effect that could have really altered it, and it's important to look at those too. So yeah, just something I missed, clearly a mistake on my part, and quite a few people pointed it out, and yeah, you're totally right.
It's interesting though, because when I play pre-cons, typically my mind isn't in that spot, which is just like, how can I get max value out of this thing and like abuse this mechanic a little bit to like cheat something out early?
Yeah.
It's more just like in the, ha, play my cool things, slug them out, and it's easy to miss stuff like that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, in the moment, I remember like thinking there's probably something clever I can do here with this bounce land, and just, you know, there's a lot going on in the days we're shooting game nights, but I honestly can't say I would have thought of that in a normal Commander game all the time either. Like, things are just happening, so... That's the way it goes.
Had you built the deck, you knew more about the interactions, maybe you wouldn't have missed it, right? But in this case...
I mean, all excuses, but I'm happy to just say, yeah, I missed it. I made play mistake. Like, it happens all the time,
yeah,
honestly.
It does happen all the time.
Just put it on the list with the rest of them. Okay, another thing people questioned, which I think this one is more up in the air. It's not as cut and dry as the last one. So on the turn where I play Paco and I attack with it with haste and I exile cards from the top of everybody's library with fetch counters on them, on that same turn I play Haldan because I have enough mana at the end, and what happens is, well, let's play the clip.
And then I will tap three and I will play Haldan, Avid Arcanist.
So good.
And I will pass the turn.
All right, I will untap and I will draw for turn.
So I play the Haldan.
Poor Haldan.
Yeah. And what happens is Jimmy ends up removing the Haldan before it gets back to my turn. You actually like purposefully are like, nope.
Yeah, right. I could wait one more turn to use my mana because you have a turn before me, but I'm like, I'm not letting you untap and having access to all those cards and more because Paco's going to swing again.
Yeah, so Jimmy waits till the end step before my turn just to make sure Cassius or Alias is not going to deal with it. And then he's like, no, okay, they didn't. I have to. Destroys my Haldan, which means I don't have access to all the cards, not just then, but throughout the rest of the game. And there's quite a few that Haldan exiles, which is a pretty big blow because that's a lot of card advantage I could have had access to. So a lot of people were like, Josh, why did you hold your Haldan in your hand and then play it the next turn? So at the very least, you can cast one of those spells because, you know, it's only a few mana and then you'll have mana left over and you're going to get some value. And even if Jimmy removes it at that point, you got, you know, there was a Jace Architect of Thought in there. There was some other stuff. So, which I think is a decent question to ask, and here's how I would answer, because I did think about that in the moment. Remember, Jimmy and I are still swinging at each other every turn, and I've just swung at him for like
nine
or something.
Nine,
And but I know he's got like 11 power coming at me, because you've got the Kazor, you've got the Beast token that's got a plus one counter, you got the Otrimi Trumpeting Gnar Mutate with a plus one counter on it. Haldan's is a 1/4, so can keep the Kazor away from attacking me.
Which it doesn't attack you, by the way.
It goes at Alias. Yeah. So that's a big point, which is why I played it. I also had, you remember a couple turns later, I play Prophetic Bolt. I had that in my hand. So I was thinking, you know, actually, I didn't know Jimmy was going to do it, but if somebody removes Haldan, that means Kalamax is still out, and I get this extra card off Prophetic Bolt. And if they remove Kalamax, that means Haldan's still out, and I can have extra cards. What I didn't want to do is have only one of those out, and then one removal spell really sets me back. So that was my thinking at the time. Maybe it's incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all seen what happens if you bet a little too hard on one thing or the other. Cassius especially, right, with Estrid. So like you want to, I think in these decks too, we all kind of know that there's a lot of removal. There's a lot of sort of pinpoint removal to keep the balanced environment, a little more balanced and fair. So I can see it going both ways. But at the same time, we just had a deck tech about Paco and Haldan. Well, actually, you'll see that later.
Recorded it, but it's coming out.
Part of the discussion is like, when should you play Haldan when Paco's out, and should you wait and all that stuff? But in this case, I think you're pretty safe to do these sorts of things if you don't think people are going to like inherently, like me in this case, wouldn't like have to get rid of that.
Yeah, and I don't know that anybody has a removal spell even, so it's possible both survive. I also think generally when it's close, I'm going to do the more mana efficient play.
Yeah.
So to me, like leaving the three mana, just not using it, is a downside. Like sometimes you do want to do that, but in general, if you cannot, then you should use your mana. And I was like, you know, if Haldan gets removed, I thought I was still in an okay spot because of that Prophetic Bolt.
You were in an okay spot. You know what I just realized, though? Had you cast your Kalamax earlier, that means Paco also would have come out earlier, too. And then that would have changed every single card that he exiled. because it would have happened to turn earlier.
Yeah, the domino effect of
it's impossible
that,
to
of
really
that mistake,
actually understand, yeah, what happened. Okay, later on in the game, I throw a Hail Mary as I am on death's door, and I cast a massive Genesis Hydra for nine. Flip nine cards over, and I choose one of them that is not a card that a lot of people said, hey, why didn't you cast this instead?
Yeah, wait, let's play the clip.
Oh, yeah, play the clip.
Look, I'm not even sure what's in the deck that could potentially save me in this situation, but you gotta just hope for it. So let's see what we get.
So I'm gonna reveal the top nine cards in my library, and I can cast a non-land permanent with CMC 9 or less from among them onto the battlefield. Nothing good here.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh gosh. So you'll see the card, it doesn't get highlighted because I say I'm choosing between two of the cards here. Turns out, Genesis Hydra has...
It's called Deadly Tempest.
Deadly Tempest. It's a board wipe that gets rid of all creatures, but also deals you damage equal to how many creatures you control, I believe.
Jimmy, why didn't you just cast the board wipe?
I know. I should have if I could have, because Genesis Hydra says you may cast Narn land permanent.
Yeah, it has to be a permanent.
Yeah, so we're looking lands, enchantments, all that. Oh, not even lands. Enchantments, artifacts, planeswalkers, all that good stuff, creatures.
Yeah, people are like, Jimmy, why didn't you Wrath? He would have 100% done
it. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea in that situation. Even if it kills me, I would have Wrathed, because I was going to die anyway. So instead, I chose the card that would have saved me my life. Now, maybe the better question is Propaganda better? Because the next turn, she plays the selective whatever adaptation.
Yeah.
And that's a six mana spell. Had she been able to do that, and she gets the black Soul of Innistrad. Sunblast Angel was huge.
Yeah.
And the Soul of Innistrad was game ending. So.
Yeah, I actually think, I mean, it turned out, I think Propaganda was the correct play because at the very least, what happens is in order to kill you, she has to waste all her mana for her turn, in which case she can't play the selective adaptation. You're still dead in that case, so I don't know that you care as much. You doing that was better for Cassius and I. Unless, of course, she decided it wasn't worth it to pay the mana and she still wanted to selective adaptation. But then in that case, if she does that, she can't kill you.
Yeah, but my board still gets wiped because I swing out.
Well, you know, you still have the Mind Leecher to block because you just played it and the Genesis Hydra. So you would still be alive with some stuff.
And that's another thing to scoff at. But she does have a removal spell, we know.
Well, she had to get it back, and she had to pay for the Nyx Weaver to get it, so she wouldn't have had the mana to do all that if she's selective adaptation. So Propaganda either saves you or saves Cassius and me, one of the two, but in the moment, it was hard to know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I also, I think she didn't have that many cards in her hand, but she did have the one card, which is this is the one that refills your hand or your graveyard.
And we don't even know. She could have drawn that turn.
Yeah.
True. Actually, no, we do know, because... She drew it, and she said, ooh, and we were like, uh-oh. She,
this one's good.
Yeah. So
maybe I should have read into that a little more.
It's interesting. I think I would have gone with the Propaganda there just because I think that would have... you were dead anyway, you even said, and you're like, what's costing her more, one of her creatures or a bunch of her mana? And I think, actually, I would have thought the mana is almost like time-walking her, so maybe that's more worth it than, just trying to, block and kill one creature.
Yeah, Cassius did get a good swing at her after that because she had to kind of tap out.
No, because Sunblast Angel kills all of
stuff. Oh, that's
stuff,
right.
Sunblast, so he doesn't have anything left.
Yeah. Well, either way, that card was backbreaking. Yeah. So.
I mean, Sunblast Angel into the rest of it is
Soul
just
of Innistrad. Yeah. You get all your cards back now. This is the deck that has just been, it had the most staying power for sure in that moment.
All right, there's another play that people were wondering about, and it was... There's a turn later in the game, you're kind of at low life, and Alias goes to attack you, and you use Reclamation Sage on the Shining Impetus, because it's kind of the only removal spell you've got. Let's play the clip.
We're going to move to combat, and I'm going to attack you, Jimmy, for 7.
I think if I don't do this, I'm going to die. I'm going to tap 3 and flash out Reclamation Sage, and I will blow up the Shining Impetus.
What?
So I was able to cast the Reclamation Sage at instant speed because of the Tidal Barracuda that was out. And people are asking, well, Jimmy, this creature, it could go either at you or Cassius. Why didn't you use the Reclamation Sage to blow up the Impetus before combat so that it could also go at Josh? Because it was Josh's goaded thing. In my case, I think what I was thinking is she has a choice between me or Cassius to attack. If I cast this Reclamation Sage and blow up the Shiny Impetus, then she's definitely attacking me because I just did something to affect her creature's power. But if I don't do anything, there is a chance that she goes after Cassius instead. And then
he was at higher life.
Yeah. And I can hold my mana up. I can choose how to do things differently. Maybe I have a different target for the sage in the later on when the turn goes around.
And it was really only the difference of two life to you was a lot at the moment. But
yeah,
I don't think the treasure mattered too much because I had a bajillion. But yes, it was a treasure. Yeah, it's an interesting choice there because you have a 50-50 chance in that case. If you
maybe
blow up,
less, yeah, maybe different than
if
that.
If you blow up the shiny impetus, you have a 33% chance.
So but I think that pushes her hand into definitely attacking me if I do that.
Right. She's like, hey, I wanted my creature to be bigger.
You're already close to the death. I've already started attacking you with other stuff, Jimmy. Why would I not finish the job type of thing?
I mean, having seen the rest of the game play out, I feel like she was attacking you almost no matter what. I think she had decided, Jimmy's the easiest kill. I'm going to take him out, and then I'm going to move down the line. And that was her plan because she just went, you, me, Cassius. She had a plan and it worked.
Focus is what it was.
Yeah, she was focus firing. She wasn't gonna. She had passed the point in the game where I think she was spreading it around and had decided like, yeah, we're gonna start like taking people out and trying to get towards the end of this game, which I appreciate, by the way. Like, game's got to end, but yeah, I don't think it would have stopped it from coming at you either way. So maybe.
And the end result's still the same, right? I'm getting rid of the extra damage. I would have played that if I played it before and she still attacked me, and if I did it after she attacked me, the end damage is still the same.
Right, right.
Because I'm getting rid of the impetus.
Yeah, it had upside. You had a chance to not get hit.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we've got a bunch more questions, including a bunch of questions about what the future of Game Nights holds, considering the pandemic and everything. We talked about it a little on the last roundtable, but we've got obviously farther into it, so we know a little bit more now. But before we get to all that, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
All right, we are back, and this is the roundtable for Commander 2020, the new pre-cons with special guests Cassius Marsh and Alias V. Now we're going to get into some more interesting questions. And again, these are the comments that we're pulling from the YouTube video. If you see your name up on screen, it's because you asked the question that most likely a lot of other people were curious about. So thank you, one, for commenting. And let's just keep moving on here.
So this is an interesting one. A question sort of asking, wanting a peek behind the curtain of how the process works. Some people were asking, when Fierce Guardianship gets played...
Cassius plays it to stop Alias from casting...
Her Impetus.
Her Impetus, yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
We have the clip. Let's play the clip.
Response, I will cast Fierce Guardianship. And it will cost me no mana because I control my commander.
Whoa. Wait, it's free?
Good job, Cassius. How did you do that? No mana?
So if you notice in that clip, I am surprised. I'm like, wait, it's free? And... somebody asked, well, Josh, you guys have the decks early, and don't you know about the card? Is that real surprise, or are you faking it for camera? And listen, I want to say at the beginning, we're not above, like, playing into a bit. Like, I'm not saying
we had an arm wrestling match, and we dressed up in fake tuxes. We play into bits.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a legit question. In this case, no, that was real surprise. Because we didn't build these decks, they're pre-constructed decks... I never even really looked at them. I think that's kind of the fun for me of some of these episodes is...
Sight unseen, shuffle up.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I looked at my own deck before I played it because that's important to do, I think, before you play your deck, just so you have an idea of what it's doing, what's in there, what you might top deck.
Mm-hmm.
If there's tutors, what you need a tutor for, although precons generally don't have tutors. But, I think you want to know your own deck. And we had played these decks the night before, although I had played the Mardu deck, but we'd just sort of given them one test game the night before. We don't actually get these decks like weeks in advance. Usually we get them and within a day or two, Wizards tells us on this date, you're going to get the decks. And we schedule shooting the episode as soon after that point as possible because that gives us the most amount of time to edit.
Mm-hmm.
So usually it's like physically get the decks in the mail. Next day or day after that, we're shooting.
Yep.
And it's already been pre-scheduled for months. So we played the decks once the night before. Cassius couldn't make it. So it was me, Jimmy Alias, and one of our editors. Don't remember
Josh?
Who.
I think it was Murphy.
Murph. Okay. And then, or maybe Jake. And then.
Maybe Jake.
Yeah. So I only knew the cards that had gotten played in that one game the night before.
So we didn't have huge in-depth knowledge of the decks. Now our judge will go through and read all the cards to make sure that they understand what's going on there.
But that's the morning of the shoot. We're running around setting up cameras, getting everything ready.
Yeah.
So did you look at all the decks before we played?
I sifted through all of them, so I knew that cycle existed. But it still caught me by surprise when it happened, because you know, you're still looking at a bunch of new cards. You don't really realize, oh, crap, that is a possibility at this point, even though cash is tapped out. You just sort of figure pre-con environment, people are tapping out, people are just getting their cards on the battlefield, and that's it.
Yeah, I knew that I had Deflecting Swat in my deck, but I didn't know it was a cycle, and I certainly didn't know what the blue one did. So I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I'm still like, wait, what, on that card. So, like, even if I saw it tomorrow, I'd be like, wait, let me read it again. That's, yeah, it's free.
Yeah, and we played two of them. We also played the fog effect during this one as well.
So, yeah, that was real surprise.
Okay, so impetuses were flying around in this game. Obviously, a lot of them hit me at the end of the game. And there was one case when Cassius himself cast one on Alias's commander. And, well, let's roll the clip and see what we say about it.
I'll play Marshall Impetus. And I will target Kethril.
Whoa, what?
This is a new cycle of cards from the Ikoria pre-cons, and it's almost like it's better than Cassius removing it. Because of Goad, it can't attack him. So rather than kill the thing, he turned it into a weapon that's now working for him.
So Josh, this one's sort of removed at, this one's sort of targeted at you here.
Yeah, so I made the statement that like this impetus from Cassius on Alias's commander was almost like better than removing it because it was now a weapon that is working for him. And people were like, yeah, they quoted me in quotes in the comments saying that and then said, but in all the podcast episodes, you said to take these out of the deck and that the impetus cycle sucked.
We did say to take them out of almost every single deck. And we did maybe allude to the fact that this cycle kind of sucks. But
Go ahead.
We're not playing in constructed commander games here. This is the pre-con environment.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think those cards are not very good, and I don't think they go in very many decks, and I do think you should take them out of all the pre-cons when you're upgrading these decks. Here's the thing. I'm going to use a sports analogy, and I apologize for those people that don't like sports.
Ba-da-da.
Let's say the worst player on your team takes a three-point shot. The guy that's the worst shooter, or girl. That's not a good shot for your team to be taking.
Mm-hmm. However, in general.
Yeah. However, sometimes that shot goes in. That doesn't mean that you should want that player to take all of your shots. That doesn't mean that that player's shooting percentage has changed. This is a similar thing. I don't think those impetuses are very good. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean there's no cases in games where the impetuses do good things.
Right.
What we're saying is the average case scenario or the especially in, like you said, in larger commander games, like in a pre-con environment, that card's going to look a lot better than it will in another environment because there's just less interaction. You notice in this game, big creatures just kind of matter more than they generally do just mm-hmm. because there's not a ton of board wipes. So, yeah, I think it was good in this game, and I was reflecting on it in the context of in this game, not in the context of, you know, all games of Commander.
Yeah, also, like, it might be like that player can only take that three-point shot when you're playing a practice scrim.
Yeah,
with the,
and you want him to because you want him to get better at it. But yeah. In a real game, if the championship's on the line, LeBron James takes the shot.
Yeah, you're giving the highest percentage chance.
Yeah, Steph Curry takes that shot.
Yeah, well, Steph Curry's definitely taking the three. He's taking like an eight based on where he shoots the ball. Seriously, sometimes he's like almost half court. I'm like, what? And then it goes in, swish. You're like, all right, never doubt.
It's insane.
Okay.
So we still think the impetuses are bad and still take them out of all the decks.
Yeah, it's, again, everything's relative here. So you can see how they shine relatively.
But in that game, that impetus was great for Cash.
It's great for everyone but me. All right. Well, speaking of me and everyone but me, in this case, viewers have known my luck to be pretty abysmal over the years. However, this is an episode where Josh even says in the episode, people are getting lucky. And I will say that there was a bit of a turn of fortune here. So let's take a look at a couple of sequences and see and gauge who's the actual lucky ones here.
I'm going to tap 5 mana and cast Animus Awakening for X equals to 4.
Oh my gosh, here we go.
So I reveal the top 4 cards of my library, put all land cards among them on the battlefield, tapped.
Oh, come on!
3 lands and a Manascape Refractor.
You got 3
That's
off of it?
So
Heck
good.
Yeah, let's go!
So we're gonna go to combat. And I'm gonna swing the Nascent Metamorph at Ailey.
Oh boy.
Yeah, you're gonna reveal cards until we hit a creature.
Okay, Sol Ring.
Ugh. Tribe Elder!
Come on.
That's so trash.
Okay, so I cast Animus Awakening for 4. Not a huge number. Chances I hit lands probably around 2, right?
Yeah, probably.
1 to 2, maybe?
Yeah. It's not very great. When you did it, I was like, oh, that's not... Like, what if you only get 1 land?
Well, I did do it because we had just made the ceasefire.
Yeah.
Like, this is the only chance for me to try and get ahead, and I don't have anything else in my hand I really want to play right now, so I may as well take the shot on this. I get 3 lands off of it. 3 out of 4.
Yeah, that's a big game, honestly.
That is a big game. Good yeah. job, me. So, you know, sometimes the dice do roll in my favor.
Yeah, and me with the Sakura Tribe Elder, that didn't work out super great.
Yeah, I would say it
I could. Yeah, I could.
Probably the worst card to get.
It
you
has
get a
to
land,
be near
sure,
that.
But that's almost insult to.
She has all kinds of things in there: with first strike, double strike, lifelink, all kinds.
Yeah,
of trample.
Yeah, is Talpa in there?
Yeah, and imagine if I had gotten something big. She gets pretty low later. It could have really mattered. It would have mattered for Cassius, probably not myself.
He would have probably sequenced things a little differently.
That I mean, she's not. Maybe it saves me in some ways in that she can't attack with as much stuff because she can't leave her shields down as much. So she might have to like. If she took a bunch of damage. She might have to sit there and block.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that buys me an extra turn or two. So
well, then she might definitely be dead to a Browlin, and Cassius can start playing the math that way, right?
Probably he still wins and I don't. But, you know, it's interesting because in real life, outside of Magic, I would say you're definitely luckier than I am.
Yeah, it gets highlighted almost like it waits. My bad luck is like, all right, well, I'm coming around. But when to do it? When you're on camera.
Yeah, it's weird because definitely I think, like, if we ask like Matt or Freddie.
Oh, yeah.
And
Matt has told me he thinks I'm the luckiest person he's ever met.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, so it's pretty funny to me that, like, in game nights, the myth or the legend of you is, like, having bad luck, but that's actually not Jimmy in real life.
Yeah, and I do take crazier risks in game nights, that's for sure.
Yeah, because it's good. You want the swings to be big on camera.
Yeah, why not? It's fun.
All right, well, once again, we had a lot of animation appreciation. A lot of people saying that the animations in this episode were better than ever.
Yeah, and not only that, there were multiple animations for certain cards. Like the Dinosaur Cat, I think, had 3 animations total tied to it. So it was a lot more fleshed out. There's a lot of awesome stuff. I mean, props to 2 things for animations. The animation, as well as the direction and the sound design that goes into making the final thing work. Because if you just had the Calamax going like,
Right.
But there's not you can't hear the lightning bolts, you don't hear any of the roaring and screaming, then it sucks. It's just a fun little animation.
Let's play a couple of them.
I will tap 4 mana, and I'm going to mutate Otrimi the Ever Playful onto my Trumpeting Gnar.
Uh-oh. So you're gonna put it on top, right?
Yeah, it's gonna be on top. It's gonna be a 6/6 with all of the abilities of both cards.
Wow.
Yikes.
That's pretty cool. Okay, I can't do anything about that. So, Calamax is now attacking Jimmy.
I will cast Tidal Barracuda.
Barracuda. Yeah, I like what you said there. Listen, Sam Waldo, who does the animations, the visual parts of the animation, does a great job. And I think you can see how Sam has improved at it mm-hmm. as we go. So people saying that the animations are getting better, it's 100% true because Sam is learning something every time.
You'll understanding the card art a little better too, right? What the artist is trying to intend.
We used to just only have the characters pop out and move, and now sometimes we fly into the card, and now we're having the sometimes the characters come in from off screen and do stuff before they land in the card. They don't just jump out of the card.
Yeah.
And so Sam's like adding to his toolbox every single time and being like, oh, we can do this. And so it's been really great to see when we have the conversations of, you know, what should we do with this animation? What would make sense? And then I really like what you said about the sound design. You know, for budding filmmakers, editors, content creators out there, I always say, and it's always been true, sound is more important than visuals. Because if you make something sound good, it's a lot easier to make it look good. Making something look good doesn't always make it sound good. And sound can give you so much scope. Like the size of Calamax really comes through if it roars correctly. And you see a lot of content creation out there where they have cool visuals and stuff and there's no sound to go along with it. And it just feels a lot more hollow and not as deep. And sound just adds so much. So play around with sound if you haven't done that and you're a content creator.
And go watch a Michael Bay Transformers movie if you want to learn about amazing sound design. You may not like the movie, but when they like dive into the mess of gears and all the cranking and stuff, and you can just see like just silver metal everywhere, but it still feels like you're in a giant, crazy, futuristic robot just based on how the cranks and things all happen.
Yeah, so. That stuff is nuts.
Yep. But yeah, I love the little mutate too when Otrimi became the Gnar and the Gnar became the Otrimi. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that was the only time it mutated in the episode. It would have been fun to see if there are other things out there, but I'm sure that one took a lot of work.
Yeah, it's funny because we were all like, thank goodness that Jimmy only mutates one time because we couldn't do this every single time.
Yeah, it's pretty so much work, yeah.
And it's pretty complicated from a lot of different aspects. So I know a lot of people want to see more mutate, and I think it would have been nice if you were able to maybe one more time or something. But I definitely wouldn't have wanted like seven mutates going on in that episode.
Spoiler alert, I didn't really draw any.
Yeah. So. There's actually only like what 12 or 13 mutate cards in that deck, so not super surprising. All right, the next one is it's prescient. Like, you predicted the future, because remember, well, we're going to talk about this a little later, but you or we recorded this episode months ago.
Yeah,
so people, a lot of comments, this is probably the second or maybe the first most commented thing was, Jimmy, you got taken out by the Murder Hornet.
And in, I don't know if you knew this, but in the Pacific Northwest, I believe in America, we've had the first reported case of basically Murder Hornets, which are these.
It's an online meme-y thing that's going on right now.
Which is just like, can 2020 get any worse? Yes, it can. Now we have these hornets with mandibles the size of your fingernails flying around, and they're trying to desperately get rid of them. And I guess,
I think three stings will kill the average person or something like that.
Gosh. Well, yeah, I think it's like, it's as though someone is literally just like taking a chunk out of your skin. I've seen the bite videos. I think this is not the in the last video I said something about staying apart or staying close and something as well, and some were like, Jimmy didn't realize how prescient that was going to be.
Yeah,
so there's two episodes in a row now where I've said something and it's kind of happened. But in this case, it's Hornet Queen. It's been around since M15.
Yeah. Next, I just on the next episode, talk about everybody eating ice cream or something. How about that? Like, let's get something good.
Yeah. Well, if it's like another Unhinged episode, we could find something in that world, I'm sure. But yeah, that by the way, that Hornet Queen, one of the earliest things into the graveyard, the most impactful card, I think, by far in the entire game.
That's a really good point. Let's talk about that. Alias, think of how great she played. On turn three, she Abzan Charms, so she can have an extra card in her hand because she wants to discard Hornet Queen, specifically because she knows that her commander cares about keywords in the graveyard. I don't know if she had, is Bonder's Ornament or something? No,
yeah,
no, Bonder's
Ornament. It hit the
it's
graveyard.
It's not Bonder's Ornament. That's the Mana Rock. But I don't know if she had the card that brings back
in
her hand.
Gives a counter to it.
Yeah, in the opening turn. But like, I don't think I would have made that play. I wouldn't have wanted the card disadvantage. I would have waited till I could play Abzan Charm and keep both cards in my hand.
I most likely would have used it as a removal spell.
Yeah, so the fact that she very early in the game was like, nope, I want to do what my deck wants to do, and the Hornet Queen is what wins her the game, basically. I think the Sunblast Angel and that together, but...
Yeah, but I mean, think about the Nyx Weaver and how much it held off, because it had the Death Touch counter on it.
Yep, so yeah, she played great. She definitely outplayed everybody at the table. A lot of people were like, that deck's just better or whatever. It's not, actually.
It's not,
You played the decks, that deck is in the middle. I would say that the cycling deck is generally the most powerful deck in that environment.
But yeah, it might not have the closing power, but it also has... I mean, like, when I played it, I had an army of, like, 10 1-1s, a bunch of 2-2s, and was ready to swing out and kill everyone.
Deck, tons of cards in hand, yeah. So Yeah, she definitely played really, really well. All right, so let's talk about, we alluded to it just now, this next section is going to be more about the process of recording the episode and sort of what we're doing moving forward here. A lot of people were asking, obviously, because of lockdown protocols, social distancing, etc., when did you guys record this episode? Because obviously right now you really can't get the amount of people we would need to record game nights in all into one small studio.
Yeah, there's not much room in here. You could fit like five people in here if they all had 6 feet of distancing.
And maybe not even that, yeah. And when we record, we usually have about 10 people in this room because we have a DP, we have a judge, we have somebody taking down notes for the game, we have a sound guy. I mean, there's all kind, and then the four players, obviously, who are sitting within 6 feet of each other. We recorded this episode, of course, in early March, so lockdown protocols had not happened. I think in Washington, in Seattle area,
things had started up.
And you know, it was getting a little scary, but so far, at the time, I don't even think we ever even foresaw, like, what was going to happen.
No way. And also, like, the information that we had was very, very different compared to what we know now. Yep. And just in terms of where other parts of the world were being affected and what we could learn from them. So we sort of knew things were awry, but we had no idea to what degree and if it was going to be considered something that we had to obviously take much more drastic measures to protect ourselves against.
Yeah. So if we were recording this, we wouldn't. We just couldn't, and we haven't, during the lockdown stuff. So then people were asking, well, like, if you recorded in early March, then why has it taken so long for this episode to release? Because
release dates.
Yeah. So originally this episode was supposed to come out
a month ago?
Yeah, in like mid to late April, because if you remember, Ikoria, Lair of Behemoths, and the Commander Proctor were supposed to come out then, but they delayed the release of the physical cards in North America, Europe, and some other regions. It did come out in Asia and some places on the original date. So, you know, when they were deciding to do that, they talked to us and you know, together, we both said, we should probably push the date back of the episode.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, weird for us to be like, hey, look at these cards and decks, they're cool. You can't actually get a hold of these for, like, a month, though.
And if we had said anything in the episode and the interviews, like, go on, get them now, then we'd have to cut around that, you know, like, so obviously we want to time it up. And the show is brought to you by Wizards of the Coast, so there's no reason why we wouldn't be incommunicado with them to be like, hey, when do you think is the best time to come out with this episode? Because we're obviously doing this in support of each other here.
And, you know, we're going to talk about this more in a second, but we knew at that point, hey, we're probably not going to be able to record the next one. So for me and the team, we were like, do you want an extra 2.5-3 weeks to work on the episode? Yes, we do.
Yeah, why not?
Because a lot of times for these episodes, you know, Jake and Murph and I are working 80-90 hour weeks the week or two before they come out just to get it done on time, especially when they're long episodes, like the Theros episode. We were working, you know, from 8 a.m. till midnight.
Every special episodes, like Brandon Sanderson's draft queue, like there's a bunch of other things you have to incorporate when you're explaining those out.
So for us to be like, hey, you won't have to work any 80-hour weeks on this one, we were like, okay, we'll take it. A little bit of upside, you know.
I mean, you guys had the praise for the animations as well, so there's a lot more. That, yeah. Right? Like, when you finish an episode, would you say there's a list of things that you wanted to do but you couldn't?
Every time.
Yeah, there you go. So now some of those things were able to be done because of a little extra time.
And
so,
for sure, this episode had the smallest list of that we've ever had, probably. So, yeah. And then, so the next question is, will there be an episode? A lot of people are like, oh, can you do another episode building around the
Godzilla cards?
Yeah, Marvelous, the legends the cool from stuff. The main set, Lair of Behemoths. And here's the thing. There was going to be that episode. We had it planned. We had guests booked. In fact, we had a really cool theme, which I won't spoil because we're still going to use it again, hopefully in the future. And then,
yeah, it was in my calendar since January, the shoot date, because we had locked it in really early.
We had locked it in. We had the guests. We knew the dates. And then the health crisis happened and we had to cancel it. So, because we couldn't have people flying in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last thing we want to do is say, like, hey, everyone's going into lockdown. We were actually, I think it was like April 4th is when we planned on filming it. Yeah. And this is after the lockdown.
In fact, began. We waited. We were like, how bad is it going to get? Let's wait and see if, you know, it only lasts like a week. Nope. And then everybody cancel their flights. We couldn't be asking the guests to like risk their lives and get on flights and stuff like that at that time.
Fortunately, all of the airline companies clearly understood why people were canceling flights as well. So we didn't have, you know, we didn't suffer a huge loss here, but we did suffer a delay, obviously.
Well, that's just a cancellation.
Yeah, that one's cancellation, right.
We'll never be able to film the Ikoria Lair Behemoth episode. Well, never's a long time, but right now there's no plans to do it, and we're going to have to move on to M21 now. And I guess this should lead into the next question, which is, just pandemic questions, and mostly questions regarding how the health crisis is going to affect game nights moving forward and if we're even going to be able to make it in the near future. And right now, the answer is we don't know. We're talking with Wizards about M21. We're hoping, because you also have to understand, Wizards has been affected, right? All the Wizards employees are not all, but are, I'm not sure what percentage, but a lot of them are working from home. Their manufacturing got affected.
Distribution centers, right? These are all places where people need to be close to each other. Like, we work with our distributor, Penny Arcade, for all of our stuff, and it took months and months for them to reopen safely under the correct guidelines, and they need to make sure they're following those to a T before they're even able to operate. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes here.
And they're not still up to full operation.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can imagine that. So the normal process by which we talk to Wizards, figure out a date, they can get us the cards early, because again, we have to get the physical cards way before they're available in stores, that's all been disrupted by the health crisis. So we're in the middle of talks with them about when we may be able to get M21 cards. And then it's like, okay, if we get it then, can we even shoot the episode? Can we even all get everybody in a room? Will it be safe?
That's, I think, the most important thing.
Yeah.
Because people might ask, well, why don't you just do your own homebrew commander decks or whatever? And there's a couple of answers to that. One, not safe to shoot in those environments. But two, this show exists because of the sponsorship. And especially during these times when every other part of revenues are down because people aren't out there, the ad buys on YouTube are completely different. We can't just go willy-nilly make the show because we don't have the way to pay for it either. The editor,
you
got to
pay
time.
Like 1200 hours plus of labor, and some of that is obviously Jimmy and mine, but a lot of it is other people that like have to pay their rent and stuff. They can't just work for free for that amount of time. So the show has to generate enough revenue to pay for that stuff. And then there's equipment and rentals and all kinds of things.
And the health.
Yeah. I'd say, like you said, the biggest thing though is, is it safe to get that amount of people into a room in a tight space to actually record the game?
And I would say no.
At the moment, right, the answer is definitely no.
I mean, major studio motion pictures with hundreds of millions of dollars behind them are being stopped right now. Our rinky-dink game.
Yeah, little YouTube show is deaf. But I will say that in California, they are starting to sort of slowly soften some of the stuff. Some businesses are being allowed to go back to work. And so we're in kind of a wait-and-see mode where it's like, let's talk to Wizards. Let's figure out when we can get the product. Maybe if the lockdown stuff loosens up enough where we get the indicators that, yes, it would be okay for a small amount of people. And then maybe we shoot it in a different way where, like, we figure out a way to have less people in this room. Our sound guy could be outside. Yeah. Our judge could be watching on a monitor in another room. You know, so now, okay, we only need 4 people in the room, or maybe we only need 5. And, you know, maybe then...
Still so much that's going on there. And yeah. I mean, the main thing is, like, we're here setting an example in different ways. And if we're going to lead by example in terms of how we want our quality of gameplay and stuff to be edited and shown online, we need to also lead in the way that we create that content. So...
So the answer to the question is we don't know, but there's a good chance that there's not another game nights for a number of months. We've never been in the situation in the last few years where we stopped, we've released a game nights, and we weren't immediately working on the next one. This is the first time that's ever happened. We do have some things in the can coming up. We recorded a couple extra episodes of Extra Turns because of our Kickstarter last year.
Mm-hmm.
And those were recorded, you know, months and months ago. So we get to work on those now. Those, we've been working on them because, again, we delayed this episode. We had some extra time. So we've got that to sort of parcel out there. We obviously have our podcast stuff. We're trying to come up with other video ideas to sort of fill the time. But yeah, as far as game nights is concerned, unfortunately, it's up in the air. We don't know, but I'd say there's a good chance that there just isn't a game nights for a little while. We're going to do the best we can, but we have to weigh all the factors and make the responsible choices.
And we appreciate you all understanding and not demanding.
Most of you.
Yeah.
All right. Big thanks. Other people we appreciate. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone.
Absolutely.
If you want to get your hands on the Commander 20 product singles, Layer of Behemoths, booster boxes, bundles, again, singles. M21 is right around the corner. We're going to start probably seeing preview cards and things like that.
I think it's going to be pretty cool. I've heard a little bit in my ear about it, and I think it's going
to
be neat.
So that's on the horizon, so that's something to look out for and order. You know, you're going to get these magic cards anyway, so if you just use cardkingdom.com/commandzone, when you do, you're supporting all of our content.
And of course, like we just alluded to, staying clean, safe, and protected is very important as well, and that goes to your cards. You don't want to just play your cards onto a table. You want to play them onto a playmat. You want to play them onto something that you know it's going to keep them safe and not get them dinged up. You're going to want to put them in the right sleeve. So Ultra Pro, another sponsor of the show. They also sponsor the awesome giveaways that we're still able to ship out to you all, by the way, from Game Nights. Don't forget to enter if you haven't already. You have until 1 week from the release of the episode to enter. So hopefully...
Probably have like one day.
Yeah. So this is your final reminder. But yeah, big thanks to Ultra Pro. As always, we've been talking to them as well. They had to shut down a lot of their distribution and manufacturing centers. So it's been a really hard time.
We didn't mention this on any of our content, but UltraPro switched over a bunch of their manufacturing so they could make facial shields and stuff, and they're donating that.
That's right.
They were donating that to like medical personnel. So UltraPro really, UltraPro really like helping out in a tough time in the world and helping out the medical community. So, you know, we couldn't be more proud to have a sponsor like that for sure.
Yeah, and look, if they're qualified to make that stuff, they're definitely qualified to make the best magic product as well to protect your stuff. I'm serious. I'm absolutely serious.
Yeah, that's a really
that's
good
like point. A really high tier to hit, by the way. And the last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. We love our patrons. Josh and I are on the Discord for those at that tier every day answering questions, and we're able to get into some of the more nitty gritty questions as well. And we have a whole long list of things we've talked about in the past. So if you want to get on there, make sure you check out the Patreon. We shout out users every single episode of the podcast. They get free merch if you're at the right tier for long enough. There's lots of great perks of being there. And most importantly, they are our most important supporters forever and always.
They are really keeping us afloat right now. Obviously, economics in the world are in a rough position. It's no different for us. So yeah. Patrons, you all rock.
Thank
for
you
sure.
All.
And thanks everybody out there for watching this episode. We'll be back with another podcast, I think, later this week. So hit that subscribe button.
Yeah, and the notification bell.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
Bye-bye.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.